Again, Mr. Sokolow.
May it please the court and counsel.
You drew a big audience today, Mr. Sokolow.
Well, we'll see how they feel afterwards, Your Honor. The issue in this case is whether the district court erred by applying the aggravated assault guideline and by enhancing the sentence for bodily injury. The crux of the issue with regard to the aggravated assault guideline is whether there was a felonious assault that involved an intent to commit another felony. The dispute between me and the government is whether there was a prior deportation, which would mean that the assault occurred during a 1326 violation, and whether the marijuana offense was over. As I say in the brief, the PSR expressly says in the criminal history section that my client was never deported. The government construes the prior 1325 convictions as 1326 convictions, which they're not. But out of candor to the court, I want to say in trying to understand the government's argument and preparing this week, I found a statement in the PSR that both the government and I overlooked in our briefing. Even though the PSR in the criminal history section states that the defendant was never deported, paragraph 46 of the PSR has this peculiar statement. At the age of 13, the defendant obtained his laser visa. His visa was terminated a year ago after being deported to Mexico. I believe this is a misstatement as it directly contradicts the statement in the criminal history section, which says that immigration authorities confirmed there was no deportation. The statement is also very odd because—
Yeah, Mr. Sokolow, what do we do with that though?
Well, there are two things.
I mean, if there's a conflict in the evidence, what do we do?
You vacate the sentence, Your Honor, because the government had the burden of proof to show by a preponderance of the evidence that there was a deportation.
And we have to send it back and remand it back to determine what if that's correct or not, right? Because if it's correct, then it supports the government's.
That he was deported.
I mean,
that would give the government a second bite at the apple, and I don't believe that should be done. However, if the court has doubt about it, of course we would prefer a remand as opposed to an affirmance.
Sure.
But it's our position the government had the burden, the government shouldn't get a second bite at the apple, and that this court should vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing without the aggravated assault guideline application.
Counsel, you're to be commended for your candor in pointing this out to us, and I don't want to linger on this too long, but it does seem to me when you say second bite of the apple, that was in the record at the time, so it wouldn't so much be a second bite. They didn't rely on it. I don't know the significance of it, but they would not have be introducing something that wasn't already introduced, that just nobody had noticed.
Well, no, when I say that it would be a second bite of the apple, there's a conflict. They had the burden to prove which statement was true. They didn't come forward with evidence, which they easily could have by getting immigration documents to prove which statement was true. So it would be a second bite of the apple, giving them a chance to come forward with documentation if they could. And this statement seems so peculiar to me, I don't believe they can. And here's what's really strange about it. The PSR in the criminal history section states that he has two prior illegal entry misdemeanor convictions. If he had a visa, how would you get those convictions? You just walk across, show your visa, and you're good to go. So I don't know if that was left from the last PSR. I don't know if that's a misstatement. I don't know, from a previous PSR. But it seems to me that it's very odd that it's in there.
But see, all of that should have been brought up to the probation officer through some type of objections. You know that. I mean, what you're saying right now is grounds at least to point to the probation officer that here are some discrepancies and, you need to resolve this.
Well, we did point out to the probation officer that his convictions were for 1325, that 1325 is complete when you enter the United States, so that the subsequent assault could not have involved that conduct. And the probation officer came back in the second addendum to the PSR and actually what's really peculiar too is the probation officer didn't rely on that statement in response to our objection to the statement in paragraph 46. Instead, the probation officer said the defendant has two prior illegal entry convictions. This illegal entry conviction would make it a felony. Now, that is clearly under 1325, and it just shows that the probation officer completely misunderstood the nature of a 1325 conviction. Yep. At that point, the government should have stepped forward. I agree with you, but that wasn't our job. The government should have stepped forward and said, oh no, you're wrong, probation officer. Here's what supports the enhancement, and here's the documentation. They didn't do that. Your Honor, the marijuana offense, I really don't have much more to say about that. The marijuana was confiscated before the assault occurred. The Border Patrol had possession of it.
Let's talk about that, because I'm not sure that that's correct. As I understand it, you know, the helicopter was buzzing around. Correa, I guess his name was chasing these people. I presume there was some type of a tackle. They were intertwined, as your client said. You know, two illegals on him. The bundles were already someplace in near vicinity, but not in their possession. And then this altercation takes place. It seems to me that one of the things the district judge did say is there's an assault. Was he right to suggest there was also an attempt to escape apprehension, which could have been a separate felony? I know he said that they were trying to escape, but the question is, and you know, under C, an intent to commit another felony, is escape, we don't even have to have a felony, does the evidence support intent to commit an escape? That's number one. Number two is this: had they been successful, it seems to me also they could have retrieved at least some of those bundles that were close by. And would that support the enhancement here?
Well, Your Honor, to answer the first question, as I recall the PSR, it says the helicopter comes in, it leads the Border Patrol agents
Correa.
To the marijuana,
right.
And the marijuana is secured. That's what I recall.
Okay. And I did not see that in the briefs. I have not read the PSR, but I did not see that part in the briefs.
Well,
I thought that what happened was he said there's these people. They drop the marijuana, and then there's a chase, and Correa comes in contact with these two people. Whatever happened, okay.
I'll recheck the PSR when it's down, Your Honor, but that's how I recall it.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
That they secured the marijuana. In fact, that's the basis of my argument.
Yeah, no,
I mean, if there are still people out there trying to get at the marijuana, that would make my argument a bit more difficult, but as I recall, the marijuana was secured.
And by Border Patrol?
Yes, and I'll recheck the PSR to make sure I'm correct about that,
sure.
Your Honor.
Okay.
With regard to the escape, I mean, they charged him with obstructing an officer. I think, that to say that he was trying to escape is to multiply to turn the offense back on itself. It's using the resisting arrest resisting arrest.
Yeah, but it's the guidelines that we have to look at. And it seems to me an aggravated assault means a felonious assault that involved, it has a different, but part C, an intent to commit another felony. And that's what popped into my head when I was reading both briefs in this case. And if I'm not mistaken, the district court said that about the attempt at escape.
But the problem with that is, Your Honor, it uses the offense he committed twice. He was convicted of obstructing a federal officer during the course of his duty, which was to apprehend him.
Okay. I presume you have some type of authority for that.
No, I couldn't find authority on it, Your Honor. I would have given it to the court. But you can't use what I'm saying is your hypothetical uses the obstructing the federal officer as an enhancement for feloniously obstructing the federal officer. There has to be some independent offense.
My suggestion to you is this. You have an assault of a federal officer. There's felonious assault. You're absolutely right. That does not necessarily mean that you also are escaping. Two different things, in my view.
Well, are you talking about escape from a correctional facility? Or
you can assault. This is an enhancement for aggravated assault.
And what federal crime are you referring to, Your Honor?
An assault of a federal officer, any place.
Right, and obstructing a federal officer. So what you're saying is you enhance him for obstructing a federal officer while he's obstructing a federal officer.
No.
The only escape crime I'm aware of, and I can research it, is escape from a correctional facility.
Okay, that may be the case. That may be the case. But the assault, in my view, is separate from the escape. You do not have to have, the elements are totally different, in my view. At least as I understand,
Well, as I see it, he was...
But you may be wrong. Listen, why don't you continue? I'm
he
sorry.
He was resisting the federal officers during the course of his duty.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think that can be used twice. With regard to the bodily injury enhancement, Your Honors, there's no dispute about the facts. Agent Correa became nauseous. He did vomit. He was dehydrated. But the guidelines require for bodily injury that there be serious bodily injury. And I'm sorry, that it be significant bodily injury. I think the cases I cite, Mejia Canales, where the officer had a cut in his mouth and a red mark on his head, and the Tenth Circuit said that is not serious bodily injury. Guerrero, this court said when the district court judge said the injury was minimal, this court said that is not serious bodily injury. In this case, the judge went on the record after he imposed the enhancement and said, well, I don't see any physical injury. We introduced pictures, there were no bruises, cuts, or anything of that sort. So it certainly doesn't rise to significant injury under the guidelines. I would just rely on the case law that we have and the judge's statements, and I just want to emphasize again, the judge says he may have struck the agent, we can't tell, there's no visible sign of tangible physical injury. It's not infrequent for it to have these happen. There's no major physical injury. There did not appear to be a tangible sign of physical injury. For these reasons, Your Honor, I request that you vacate the sentence. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sokolow, and you save time for rebuttal. Mr. Turner.
May it please the court, counsel. At the outset, I'd like to briefly note on this paragraph 46, that wasn't the basis of the 1326 reference, and I was prepared to concede today that it is a 1325 violation and not 1326. My problem was I didn't read paragraphs, I think it was 37 and 38, detailing how he was in fact removed from the country. There were two voluntary departures noted there. So I would say it's a felony 1325. But the gravamen in this case, and I think whether the district court correctly applied the sentencing guidelines, when he adopted the recommendation of the pre-sentence report and computed the sentence from a base offense level based under section 2A, 2.2A, turns on what Congress meant when it used the term involve under first section 111A, where the acts in violation of this section involve the intent to commit another felony, and what the Sentencing Commission meant when it defined aggravated assault as a felonious assault that involved an intent to commit another felony. Gomez-Vega proceeds from the premise that the physical contact with Luis Correa did not involve an intent to commit another felony because the other felonies were reportedly complete when he resisted Agent Correa's attempt to arrest him for possession with intent to distribute marijuana and or illegal reentry into the United States. With respect to the marijuana, Your Honor, I think it is clear from the pre-sentence report, the first dispatch was a disturbance on the border, so the agents were dispatched to investigate the disturbance, which could be an illegal entry, or in this particular case, smuggling marijuana. The helicopter, the first thing they see is the marijuana, the bundles of marijuana. They haven't spotted the people that are associated with those bundles. an agent does take the marijuana into custody and secures it.
So they were secured prior?
They were secured.
Okay.
And then the PSR reflects that. But I don't think, even then, I don't think we have a case because in most of these cases, we find the marijuana first, and then we find the person perpetrating it. So the term involved, everything turns on what this term involved means.
There is no, you know, this term terminated. I don't see that any place in there. And there doesn't even have to be a felony. It says intent to commit another felony. It's an intent. It's a mental state and nothing more that's necessary.
And clearly in this particular instance, this entire altercation, this confrontation, involves an intent to commit at least one felony, in this instance the marijuana probation, and as the district judge found, the alternative was an immigration violation. And also, my reference to 1326 came initially, you'll see in the trial, in the sentencing transcript, from my attorney, who said it was first to 1326, and then the probation officer weighed in that there were two prior convictions, so it could be a felony 1325 in that instance.
What do you say that involved means? Because it
seems
to me,
looking at all the connotation or definitions of involved, I've determined that the closest
is
one.
Is it a nexus?
It's a nexus. It's in connection with. It implicates and applies. And clearly when an officer is in the field to investigate an offense and he encounters someone and he engages in a confrontation and assault ensues, that certainly involves an intent to commit the offense and there's a connection. So it involves that intent to commit the other felony. I think that, under that definition, the judge's base offense level determination is correct, that it was in fact in connection with these two other felonies.
Now, you know, Sokolov indicates that if the marijuana was secure, what are you saying is the other felony? Or at least the intent to commit another felony. What exactly are you saying?
Well, he's evading responsibility first for the marijuana offense, even with the marijuana being secured. He's trying to elude capture there, and that's probably the judge was talking about escape. I think it was he's trying to elude apprehension for the smuggling of that marijuana.
Is that an actual offense, or are you just explaining what he's doing? I mean, one of the suggestions Judge Garza had is perhaps we can look at a different felony, but that's not actually a felony.
Well, it could also be a state felony as well. Because there's one of the cases cited that deals with a felony escape could be a state line that is an intent to commit a felony that could be an intent to commit it under state law that could have been a violation that. Now, I'm just saying this is what happened. I'm not sure. You know, I have to look it up and check. I understand the question now. I'd have to double check that too to see whether there's in fact a federal provision for eluding arrest. I know I'm confident there is in the state of Texas, but I'm not sure.
See, and I think the other aspect of this is that this particular crime that he was charged with, whether the elements of escape are the same or different than this...
Impeding and obstructing the
exactly.
Officer's duties. Yes, Your Honor, I'd have to check.
Because we have a lot of cases where the same acts can be charged differently and convicted differently.
Do you have any case law that would support this argument that involved another felony could extend chronologically of like this, that the prior felony can be at an end, which you may dispute that it was at an end, but let's say we determined that. Any case law to support
no,
that?
No, Your Honor, and honestly, that's what I've been looking for the last 3 days to see in fact whether there was any, and there really isn't any. So, and the problematic is this, is when we're talking about the completeness and then the defense is at an end, usually that's dealt with in terms of statute of limitations and triggering limitations to run. Here, limitations can't run, speedy trial can't start because there's no suspect in custody. So that's why I think it involves in connection with, in this instance, it really is irrelevant whether or not the offense is at an end because there's still that intent to commit the offense. He was thwarted by virtue of the fact that the officers seized the marijuana.
This is, you know, what's funny about this case is we have a series of events, a series of actions, and we're trying to parse out concepts, criminal concepts, at this with this continuous integral series of actions. The coming across, the carrying of the bundles, the leaving the bundles, the trying to elude the confrontation part of it, and we're trying to parse this out in a temporal, you know.
And that's what makes, that's why, again, it goes to what do they mean when they use that term involves, and the best I can figure on looking at all the definitions of involve, and there are several, that in connection with and implicates is the most appropriate one. Logically, if it's because the agents they are investigating, he's supposed to apprehend the individual that committed the offense, whether it be an illegal entry or whether it be the drug transaction. So practically speaking, it involved the intent to commit those offenses.
It seems to me this enhancement would primarily be involved with activities such as the law enforcement officer is addressing in some fashion the underlying criminal conduct, and there's assault on the law enforcement officer by the perpetrator of whatever this other offense is, and the line that maybe the language would allow to be drawn is so long as that other offense is over, this enhancement isn't available. But I must say that doesn't seem to be what the enhancement's getting to.
No, and I've been finding case law consistent with that, and I think the judge in this instance also merged. Certainly it speaks to the 3553A1, the nature and circumstances of the offense. The reason we don't see a harmless error analysis in this is because the judge didn't pointedly say that this is the sentence I would impose under 3553A1. And I think what gets crosswise where he doesn't see a physical, any physical sign of injury, that also goes to the nature and circumstances of the offense and the need to deter this type of conduct in the future. But he doesn't say that precisely, whether it's a 3553A offense or not. Which leads me to the second issue, and that is whether he appropriately applied this the bodily injury adjustment for nausea, vomiting, and dizziness. And I looked at the cases cited by Mr. Sokolow, including Lancaster. Lancaster, it was mace in the face of an individual that had treated. And there are several observations from that case that I commended the court's attention here. Firstly, observed the injury need not interfere completely with the injured person's life, but cannot be wholly trivial, and while it need not last for months or years, must last for some meaningful period. Stated otherwise, a momentary or no lasting effect, or if it's wholly trivial, it's not a bodily injury under the guidelines.
But it does say serious.
It does indeed say serious, and I also suggested that it has to be in, that it would be significant in the sense that it interferes with the person's conduct, or in this instance required intravenous fluids, emission of oxygen. But I think more tellingly, as far as its significance, is that the young man admitted he could not have continued to defend himself in light of this.
Yeah. The other aspect of this case is, you know, the defendant here was benefited by two things. Number one, one of his colleagues, in fact, came to the assistance of Agent Correa. And secondly, Agent Correa was able to at least defend himself from the major blows, both of which, at the very least, the risk of serious bodily injury was clearly present. And I think the court said that.
He did. And again, it was in context, part guideline computation, part 3553A consideration. Now, in further looking at the cases, this court most recently addressed the issue in an unpublished opinion, which I found yesterday. I have a chance to put in 28J letter, but the case is U.S. versus Lister, and it's found at 229 Federal Appendix 334, it's a 2007 decision, in which the injuries there were, in fact, the individual was a prisoner. He was dizzy, bruised, and he was scratched. So there was a visible sign. Here, the thing we don't have is a visible sign. We have him vomiting, we have him with nausea, we have him dizzy. And there, the court also observed that significant bodily injury doesn't lend itself, it's not susceptible to a precise standard, and it requires almost a fact-intensive analysis. The court also cites in Lister several other opinions that I think are appropriate here. In U.S. versus Green, cited in the Lister, 964 Fed Second, 911. The Ninth Circuit held that a victim teller suffered sufficient bodily injury due to a slap in the face that caused swelling and pain for at least 24 hours. Green in turn cites U.S. versus Isaacs, a 947 Fed Second 112 Fourth Circuit decision in which the victim there said the blow to the head was incident to cause him any pain.
I presume that the evidence before us is the PSR.
The PSR,
yes. There was no live testimony down below.
No testimony at all. It's all in the PSR. Everything is drawn from the PSR.
Well, Mr. Turner, let me make sure I understand the evidence of serious bodily injury. Nausea, vomiting, dizziness due to dehydration and exhaustion. It seems, and I think the PSR specifically says that was a result of the pursuit, the struggle, and the apprehension. So in a way, we're making the defendant responsible for the physical condition of the arresting officer. I mean, sort of after some track and field event, the person's exhausted and dehydrated and may need an IV, and we would be calling that serious bodily injury. I'm not saying these are comparable, but it does seem to me that the physical exertion necessary to apprehend isn't the kind of serious bodily injury I've seen in the case law.
Well, there's another aspect of this I would note on paragraph 8, and they use the term full mount position, which is a mixed martial arts wrestling term in which the individual is seated upon the individual with the abdomen and chest. That's where he tried to make his blows. I would suggest that that exacerbated anything that happened to the officer during the course of the search, and it's the reason why he suffered the dehydration and dizziness. And
well, but Judge Garza,
physical contact.
I mean, Judge Garza pointed out that the officer was sufficiently nimble to ward off some of this attack, and so, I mean, it was sort of mixing, it seems to me, what may have been his actual injuries, which was the exhaustion and the heat, what, I don't know what month this was and that sort of thing, but the exertion necessary to apprehend being turned around and made into the injury caused by the defendant. But,
and again, I think that it turns you to look again at that one section where they do describe, it's a description of what the confrontation actually entailed. He was sitting on this officer, and you look at the weights, the respective weights, and the slight build of our agent. The reasonable conclusion is that caused this bodily injury. With that, I would suggest that the district court, and I look at the district court's findings, and again, he mixed and merges 3553A with the guideline computations. And in this instance, the 46-month sentence for this violation and the 4 months for the probation violation is a reasonable sentence, and we urge the court to affirm the sentence.
All right, thank you, Mr. Turner. Mr. Sokolow, you save time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. In paragraph 8 of the PSR, it reads, the pilot could tell there were bundles due to experience and because of their shape. And then it goes on, one of the agents recovered the bundles and secured them in his service vehicle. And then the rest of the events ensued. The defendant had to have the intent to commit another felony at the time of the assault. If the marijuana is seized, you are not committing or intending to commit possession with intent to distribute marijuana. It's over.
Well, how do you read the word involved? Certainly, Mr. Turner was heading us that direction.
Right. I think that the problem with the argument in the brief and here is that is reading involved in isolation. It's not involved. It's involved the intent to commit another felony. It's not just involved. So you have to say, was he intending to commit another felony? And that felony that he previously committed is over. Well, it's not just involved.
Mr. Sokolow, let me suggest that perhaps it's not. You're assuming that what happened, that this individual or these individuals knew, in fact, that their bundles had already been seized. They may not have. They were trying to escape. They may have known it. They may not have known it. And if it's only intent, their intent could have been to escape and retrieve those bundles. All I'm saying is that we cannot go into their mind. We need to look at their actions, and which is what the court did in this particular case, and then does this set of facts support the the enhancement in this case.
And you're absolutely right. They could have been intending that. They could have been intending anything, but the government has the burden to prove it.
Gotcha.
Okay. And, I mean, what could have been does not meet the government's burden. Just a few other points. The evidence in the record is not just the PSR. It's the pictures introduced by the defendant. The government never briefed any other felony. So to the extent that the court's considering any other felony, that's waived. The court's rules are clear. If something isn't briefed, it's waived. I just wanted to make sure I did submit a Rule 28J letter, and I just wanted to make sure the court got it with the authorities. On the flip side of that, I would have appreciated the opportunity to have read the cases discussed today so that I might respond to them. But
if you want to send us a follow-up on that to respond to those, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. The way the government described them, that they do not apply here. The government talked about scratches, bruises, swelling, and so forth, of which there was none.
What's your understanding of the evidence, the PSR, on the connection the officer's injuries to this blow, to this being mounted on top, the defendant being mounted on top of the officer? Is there anything in the evidence that would connect what he was doing then to the exhaustion and dehydration?
Well, I think there are two issues there. One is factual, which you're asking me, and one is legal. And the legal problem with it is this court's case law says you do not look at the actions of the people. You look at the injury. So to the extent that somebody was in full mounting position or threw blows or whatever, you don't look. That's not the question. The question is injury. And my factual response is that I don't even count it as an injury. We don't even use ordinary language English that way. If you said I was in a car accident yesterday and I got this serious injury, well, what happened? Oh, I was dehydrated. I threw up. But I went to the hospital as a precautionary measure. And I'd say, okay, show me your injury. What do you mean? Where's your injury? It's usually something lasting and physical, as is said in the case law. We don't consider that an injury. And I agree with you, Your Honor. There was an exertion of energy. They did struggle with each other. The facts show that, and that happens after there's a struggle. The judge even said, well, this kind of thing normally happens after there's a struggle like this. So I agree that the effects on the officer came about as a result of the struggle, but number one, I don't think they're an injury, and number two, the court's case law says you don't look at the actions of the people involved. Your Honors, for those reasons, I request that you vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Buffalo. Your case is under submission.